Kei te whakarongo koe ki te reo irirangi poho, he parakuihi tēnei. You're listening to 95BFM Breakfast. I'm very, very excited for this next chat that we're going to listen to. I was lucky enough to have a catch up with Sheila Maurice Gray, who is one of the founding members of Kokoroko. She also plays flugelhorn, trumpet, and she's one of their vocalists.
Damn.
I know. Yeah, she does it all. They're such a cool band, based out of London, but taking influence from all over sort of West Africa and all over the world, really. There's just so much genre that they managed to fit into their sound. They've got a new album out called Tough Times Never Last, and even more exciting, they're coming to Aotearoa in November, playing November 26th at the Power Station with support from Romy Wrights. I was lucky enough to have a catch up with Sheila and learn a little bit more about Kokoroko. So we're going to listen to that chat now. Let's start by talking a little bit about how Kokoroko was formed. So you and Anome met on an arts trip in Kenya. Can you tell me a little bit about that experience and what the two of you bonded over?
I was working as part of, or as a workshop leader, teaching art at an after-school program that his mum ran and organised. And then, you know, she was like, oh, I've got this program where we go to different places in Africa, different countries, and we lead workshops. So yeah, that's how I met Onime. Before then, I didn't really interact with him much. So that was the first trip where we really got to know each other. And we basically bonded over music because there wasn't great internet. We have both had like downloaded music from Spotify or something similar at the time. And it wasn't just him, it was a few others as well. So we were just sharing music. And I think we just ended up talking about Afrobeat. I was in a band at that time as well. And we were kind of complaining about like the image of like having, you know, an African band leader and then the rest of the band being like a white band. And we're just saying that, look, we need to kind of let the music kind of live longer. Let's start a band and with people our age and honour the music, if that makes sense.
Mm, yeah, for sure. I also think the fact that the band's founding members are the percussionist and the flugelhorn / trumpet player, which is you, gives you a really cool insight into the sort of groundwork for Kokoroko's sound. Is it often you two starting the sort of songwriting ideas in the jams, or is it become a real collaborative process?
I think it depends on the song, really. I think this album, maybe we did majority of the writing, but everyone has contributed a lot. So I think usually someone brings a song in, and then either sometimes it's a fully formed idea, sometimes the idea needs more time, or everyone just jumps in and we're like, okay, you do this. But really, it's the music or the song that speaks for itself.
You've also spoken a lot in the past about how the ethos of Kokoroko is really rooted in connecting children of the black diaspora with the music of West Africa, such as Highlife, Afrobeat, artists like Fela Kuti, Eno Taylor, William Onyebo and stuff. How was it that you came to love this music? Did you grow up really connected to a lot of this music, or was it sort of a journey of reconnecting and rediscovering?
So my mum's from Sierra Leone. I grew up with my stepdad, who's from Zimbabwe, South Africa. So I grew up like listening to a lot of like church music, West African church music, which had Highlife influences, but I didn't know that. Like, my stepdad used to play a lot of South African Zimbabwean music, which is amazing music. So I think I was already kind of already understanding of that music in some way. But it wasn't until I was 14 and I joined, I went to a summer school called Kinetica Blocker. And yeah, we ended up playing a lot of Fela Kuti, music from Fela Kuti, a lot of music from South Africa as well, by some folk songs and some like songs by Abdullah Ibrahim. And then I was like, oh my gosh, what is this? But I remember the first time I played Fela Kuti, it was the song No Agreement Today, No Agreement Tomorrow. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And then I went deeper into it. I remember going home to my mum to be like, oh mum, I just discovered this music, this Afrobeat. And she was like, what are you talking about? I grew up on this music. That's my experience. Whereas like maybe Onime, I think he grew up, his mum was a dancer and a performer. So I think you grew up with a lot of the music at a much younger age.
Yeah, it's such a universal experience though, like discovering all the music that your parents love and then telling them. And it's like, what do you mean? This has always been cool for me.
Exactly.
You guys are based in London and you've become sort of icons in the London jazz scene. But taking influences from all these different parts of the world, do you ever feel a little bit torn about being considered part of one scene with influences rooted elsewhere? Or do you find it's all relatively sort of connected and feeds into one another?
I think I've always understood, because of like how diverse London is, I think I've always understood, okay, yeah, as much as we are part of this quote unquote jazz scene, yeah, I think there was always an understanding like, okay, everyone's taking influence from there, blah blah blah. But at first I remember we were all like, I'm sure you've probably seen some articles, I think we were kind of like, nah, I'm not part of this London jazz scene, what are you guys talking about? But I think growing into it, I feel like I've started to understand, whatever you call it, regardless, we all kind of grew up together in a way. We all know each other. So I feel like whenever there's a scene, it's usually something similar where people have gone to uni together or they've met at a young age or whatever, and everyone starts their own bands. It's not exactly the same type of music, but there is something that connects them. So I think it's a similar thing with the London jazz scene, which I think is really beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then as well as sort of within that scene, you've had like some global success take off, especially with your breakout hit, Abusey Junction, which is sort of like really not the kind of stuff that we're normally seeing take off on streaming and online. It's like 7 minutes long, instrumental, it's really jammy. It's amazing, I love it. But it must have felt sort of quite validating and set a strong tone for what the priorities would be for you guys in terms of your sound, that it was like, okay, people are enjoying what we're doing. We don't have to, you know, make catchy hits necessarily.
It's a bit of a funny one, because at the moment I don't think we're thinking, oh, let's make this tune because it has these ingredients for a viral song. Yeah, it's such a weird thing. I feel like each time I just think we're just lucky. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I would also say that I think we had a few videos at that time. We had the Surface Sounds, which is so cringe, video that also went viral just before then. And another video that we did, like a live show we did with Jazz Refresh, that one also went viral. So maybe, I think I'm just speculating here, because there were three black women playing horns. I don't know whether that was something that sparked everyone's interest. Yeah, I'm not sure how, like, what was happening that things just ended up spiraling like that. But either way, we're super grateful.
Undergoing projects like the Could We Be More remixes, did that feel like quite a liberating experience in terms of not letting yourself sort of be boxed into one particular genre?
Yeah. I feel like maybe at the time we released that project, or just before, I remember feeling like, oh, I don't really want to do remixes. Mm-hmm. It's a bit of like a dying culture, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. It felt kind of, sometimes it goes well, sometimes it doesn't. So I think there was a lot of hesitation as well. And like, I don't know if you've checked out a lot of like African artists, when they do a remix, usually that remix ends up being like, maybe super, like a super techno song.
Yeah.
And it ends up being their biggest song. So I was like, oh, I don't want that to happen to us in a way that it takes over what the sound that we're trying to do, or the story that we're trying to tell.
Yeah.
So yeah, there was a lot of hesitation. However, it's almost like creating another body of work under another name, if that makes sense. Because you're like, okay, I'm giving this to someone else to now tell me what they think and how they interpret a song. And some of the songs, I was like, what the hell is this? Like, I'm not digging this at all. And then I think they've really grown on me, some of them. And when I hear them, I'm like, oh, what is this? And then there's a few times I'm like, oh, snap, that's the remix.
I want to talk a little bit about the new album, Tough Times Never Last. There's this sort of unfaltering underlying message of optimism and hope across the record. Where does that come from, and is it sort of a conscious thing that you want your listeners to feel out of the music, or is it more so just you guys having fun playing the music?
I think it's a bit of both, really. I think the title came after. That usually does, actually, for us. The title comes at the end. And I think what you are hearing with that title and the music is maybe the intentions that we set, which is, okay, yeah, we just want this to be a kind of like a feel-good, positive album. Bring some positivity into the world, good energy. I'm not saying it's wrong to be political. I think it's great to be political in your music. But I think also you could do good by just bringing positive energy.
Mm.
And I feel like music has such, is so powerful in that way.
And also, like, joy in itself is an act of resistance.
Exactly, 100%. 100%, yeah. So I think, yeah, and then someone reminded us of this meme. We all know this meme, and it's perfect. Tough times never last. Only tough people last. If you know the meme.
Sonically, it's quite different to the last album. There's sort of more disco and even like some bossa nova, sort of neo-soul-y vibes in there, and more, I feel like there's more sort of song structures and hooks in there. How has that evolution taken place since the last record to now?
I think me and Honoré have different viewpoints on this, but I think for me personally, I've not written like four lyrics before.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first time I was like, you know what, this time I want to write lyrics. And just even within like maybe some of the song structures and stuff like that, I kind of, for me personally, I think it was a challenge. And I was like, I really want to push myself. And I feel like the next album is always going to feel like a pressure. You're like, okay, how do I step it up now?
Mm.
And yeah, I feel like it was a natural thing where I was like, I put a lot of pressure on myself. I was like, okay, we got to do this. It wasn't necessarily intentional to write more neo-soul kind of bossa nova kind of songs. I think with the challenge, it was a natural thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can't say that, okay, this song, I definitely want it to be like a bossa nova feel. Like we are, I don't think, yeah, that was never in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was like, oh, there's this 808 drum. Oh, okay, I'm gonna have fun. let's use the sounds and let's see what we can do.
We're so excited to have you coming to Aotearoa. You're playing November 26th at the Power Station. You've got Romy Wright's opening for you. It must feel sort of surreal to be bringing this music that takes influence from the other side of the world to a completely different melting pot of genre and culture. What are you excited for with this show?
Nushi, the trombonist, her mm-hmm. auntie's from New Zealand, so I know what? She's excited to see her aunt.
Oh my gosh, that's so cool.
Yeah, and her auntie sent me a message, just like, you need to play in this venue, you need to play in this venue, which, yeah, I think is really adorable. But also, I think, culturally, I think there's a lot of history in New Zealand culturally. I think that is quite similar, but also different to West Africa in many ways. So I think our music definitely has a relevance in that side of the world. So I think, regardless anyway, I feel like it's always important and a pleasure to bring music everywhere and anywhere. I don't think anyone should be excluded from music around the world.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited for you to hear some New Zealand music as well. We'll make your playlist.
That'll be sick.